I'm Sean and I'm an alcoholic. And where to begin? My home group was also the Fourth Dimension group. We meet on Friday nights at 7 p.m. at Trinity Presbyterian Church. And a lot of you guys have been there or spoke there. So, you know, if you're ever in the area, please, we all are welcome. It's an open speaker meeting, so anybody's welcome. I have a sobriety date, which is May 23rd, 2008. And I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others. And those are three important parts of my recovery that keep me accountable to Alcoholics Anonymous. And real nervous. You know, it's one of my least favorite things to do in AA is to come up here and share my story. But I always feel really good after I do it. And But you guys are sending us someone from Tokyo tomorrow night, you know? You just got little old me from Newport Richie. I'm obviously you guys can tell by the accent that I didn't grow up anywhere near here. I was born and raised in Massachusetts, and I come from a good, loving, Irish Catholic, drinking family, you know, I don't know, we had a pretty good upbringing, you know. And my buddy Chris told me to leave this part out, but I think it's crucial to my story, you know. But four brothers, two sisters, and the majority of us are alcoholics and drug addicts, you know. Like Pat was talking about, Pat, great job, man. For a first time speaking, 60 days, man, that's pretty impressive, you know. And I got a lot out of your story, and welcome to the newcomers, you know, because you guys are the most important people in this room tonight, you know. And I remember when I first came here, when I was new, you guys were in the other church, and I came down here with my sponsor, and I'll get back to, you know, the family history after this, but I was real nervous, you know. I definitely didn't have on a suit and tie, you know, and I think I was still detoxing when I came there. And like I said, you guys, I'm just all over the place right now. I'll get into the groove. It'll happen. And you guys were in the other church, and I was really, like, out of place. I was like, you know, they tell you not to make any major decisions. Like I told you, drugs are a part of my story, and I'll get a little bit into it. But they say don't make any major decisions in the first year. And I bought a plane ticket and moved to Florida and took five Suboxones with me. And I moved down here and I sobered up in my brother's spare bedroom. And man, what am I doing? They tell me not to screw it up and like and. But anyways, back to my family, and I'll get into that again. Oh, man. I love AA, you know? I'm up in front of a podium in front of a couple hundred alcoholics and center of attention. Man, I could just sit in here all night and we could laugh. But like I said, four brothers, two sisters. My dad passed away in 97 from alcoholism. He had an identical twin brother who passed away in 87 from untreated alcoholism. And my grandfather, I remember he passed away. I didn't know back then, but when I was six, he passed away from cirrhosis of the liver. So, and I got, you know, four brothers, two sisters, and four of us are alcoholics and addicts. You know, so this thing runs deep in my family, but none of those things make me alcoholic. You know, what makes me alcoholic is what Pat was talking about, the unmanageability and the powerlessness of the illness. When I take one drink, you know, my life spins out of control and I can't control the amount that I take or where I'm going to end up. And that's what makes me an alcoholic. I suffer from an illness which only a spiritual experience will make better, you know. And I learned that in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, so I moved down here. I call my older brother. Well, my first drink was wherever. My first drink when I was about 15, and I was just, I was never a leader, you know. I followed people my whole life, you know. I was doing what the in crowd was doing, and you know, I was good at sports, and I was you know, it was definitely awkward. I was awkward growing up, you know. My whole like childhood was awkward, you know. And I was raised with good morals, good values, you know. Sunday school until I was in like the 10th grade, you know, just doing what my mom told me to do. And you know, once I got into high school, you know, I got into high school a little bit later than the average kid. I stayed back in first grade. And they were drinking on the weekend. You know, they were going to a party at a friend's house, and they were like, "You want a drink?" And they told me it like Tuesday, and I was like, "Great, I got $5 for lunch every day." You know, my mom gave me $5 for lunch, and I saved up that $5, and I had like $20, and it was good. We got some, you know, my first drink. It was Sex on the Beach, right? You know, and that's not what I was doing that night, you know. I was actually, at the end of the night, I was rolling around in the mud with a couple of friends and stuff and throwing up all over the place, and, you know, so. But anyways, you know, I was real, you know, I'm not really big now, but, you know, I was probably a little 5'1", you know, 80 pounds soaking wet, you know, and when I took that first drink, it just, the magic happened, you know. You know, it just, it did something for me, you know, and it was my solution, you know. It was my solution for a lot of years, I always wanted to get that feeling. You know, they always say, you know, it was never the same, though. The first time I got drunk was, the second time was never the same. I mean, it definitely worked and did what it was supposed to do, but I always chased that, and I never got that first, you know, that first drunk. And I ran around like that for a bunch of years, you know. I ended up, you know, I had some goals growing up, you know. I was a real good baseball player, you know, and I wanted to play, you know, I wanted to be the shortstop for the Red Sox. It's one of my dreams, you know, and once I picked up alcohol, you know, all those dreams went right out the window, you know. I feel like I'm dancing up here. When I got sober, I got a little chubby, you know. When I first got here, I could probably fit behind this podium, and you wouldn't see my legs, but, you know, so that was my goal, you know, and when I took alcohol, you know, all those goals went right out the window, you know. I was good. I was good at basketball. I was good. I played ice hockey on the high school team. You know, once I started getting into the drinking, and, you know, and drugs followed pretty quickly, you know, and I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but, you know, I started with alcohol and I ended with alcohol. You know, I'm an alcoholic, you know, and drugs just got me to my knees a lot quicker. That's all it did, you know. It sped up the process. I wish it had sped it up a little bit quicker, but I mean, 13 years I was out there for, you know, and I was probably drinking, you know. 13 was with a specific drug, and, you know, it was probably like 21 years, you know, that I was drinking alcoholically. And man, I never thought I'd say something like, you know, I was doing this for 20 years, but, you know, it's what happened. You know, so I get into a trade school, you know, and my dad, you know, before he passed away, he was in graphic arts for like 33 years, and he got me a job fresh out of high school, and me and a good friend that I grew up with, you know, he got a shift, was like 3 to 11, and I got the overnight shift, 11 to 7, and you can't do that to an alcoholic, you know, because I was, you know, getting up at 12 o'clock, and I was drinking until I went to work, and, you know, when lunchtime came around at like 3 in the morning, I was just falling asleep, and I was nowhere to be found, and, you know, I embarrassed my father, you know, and that's how it went on. That's how my drinking went on. Like, I would get jobs and I would lose them because of my alcoholism, you know, or my drug addiction, you know. You know, and nothing really good happened because of my alcohol. And, you know, I went to a lot of detoxes. You know, I ended up on, you know, I'll put it out there. I ended up on heroin. You know, it's heavy back there in Massachusetts, and I tried it and I fell in love with it. You know, it's just like the alcohol. The first time I took alcohol, I fell in love with it. You know, first time I smoked marijuana, I fell in love with it. You know, anything that I do, you know, I'm obsessive compulsive. I fall in love with things really, really, you know. I got to keep that in check, you know, in sobriety, you know, because I can veer off track very easily, you know, and do the wrong thing. And, you know, I gotta keep God first, you know. Keep God first, my sobriety second, and then anything that falls in behind that. You know, if I do it in that order, I do pretty good. You know, anything other than that, I I usually get myself in trouble in sobriety. You know, I'm not perfect. You know, I make mistakes. I've made a lot of mistakes in sobriety. You know, so I guess that's pretty good for a drunkalogue. You know, but anyways, I'll tell you how I ended up getting here. You know, so I land this good job in the painters union. You know, I got sober a couple of different times before this one. You know, in a couple of days I'll come up on 6 years of sobriety, and like, I've never did anything like this for 6 years. Nothing. You know, I mean, but I got sober one time before. You know, two times before. I got sober for a year, and I got sober for 18 months. And I did no recovery work whatsoever. I did total fellowship, go to a lot of meetings, hang out afterwards. You know, just do everything that the program tells you not to do. I did it. You know, so eventually, you know, it's like my 30th rehab. You know, up in Massachusetts, it's easy to get into rehab. You know, there's like a rehab on every corner up in Massachusetts. And so I'm at like my 30th rehab, and this guy sees me coming in and out, and he goes, "Man, what are you gonna do?" He's like, "You're in and out of these places like a revolving door." You know, he goes, "One of these times, it's not gonna, you know, you're not gonna come back. You're not gonna make it." And like my ears opened up for the first time in a long time, and I said, "I'm out of gas. I don't know what to do." And he said, "He goes, why don't you just take a suggestion?" He goes, "I suggest you go on to a halfway house." And I said, "All right, set it up." And I went to a halfway house, and I stayed sober for a year that time. You know, and they told me to get a group, you know, join a home group, get a sponsor, get active with that group. And, you know, I did the best I could with what I had, you know, and I just wasn't ready to get sober, you know. I got into a relationship. I bought a brand new car. I got thrown out of the halfway house, you know. It was just bad, you know. I had no defense for us the first drink, you know, like it talks about in our literature. The girlfriend broke up with me, the repo guy was looking for the car, and I drank, you know. And that's like the story of my life, you know. And then I repeated insanity over again, and, you know, they say, you know, the definition of insanity, repeating everything over and over and expecting different results. So, you know, I had no defense for us the first drink. So when those feelings popped up, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know to pick up the phone and call my sponsor. You know, he was more my friend than my sponsor, but he was sober a little while, and he was working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, I pick up, I drink, you know, and you know what happens, you know. I end up back in another detox a couple years later, and I do the same thing again. And this time I stay sober for 18 months, but this time I landed a really good job making good money in Massachusetts. You know, it's like, I don't know, it was my dream job. You know, I was a construction worker. I was a drywall finisher by trade. I was making really good money. I went to another halfway house after I landed this job, and still kept this job. And I don't know how. You know, the guy that I was working for, he understood. And I get to this halfway house, and they catch on to me this time 3 months earlier. You know, I made it like 5.5 months at that other halfway house. This time they catch on to me. Like, you're supposed to save money, you know, get a sponsor, join a group, you know, ask God for help. And, you know, I was saving money, but I was sending home bogus receipts to my sister and keeping the money. And, you know, I always thought it was about the materialistic growth. You know, the way you looked is the way that you measured up in life, you know. And I had to have the new Nikes and the gold chain, you know. And now, like, I moved out of it. Well, I didn't move out. They threw me out of this halfway house, and I moved into a sober house. And then I moved back to the town that I grew up in, and I moved in with a friend that got me that job and his mother. You know, and I'm doing everything that you shouldn't be doing, you know. I'm making $68,000 that year, you know, and I had nothing to show for it. Not a dime, you know. I'm starting to sell marijuana. I was the only guy that did steroids and got fat, right? I'm doing steroids with the kid I live with, and I'm jumping out.
Sorry. What? Can you make this announcement really quick?
Sure.
Thank you.
We got an announcement here. Makes it a little easier for me. Someone with a black Camaro is parked in the back lot. They are going to close the lot, the gate. Please, whoever's car it is, please move. Thank you. Where was I? Steroids. Steroids. I'm chubby now. You should have seen me then. It just blew me up. Like, I mean, it was jumping out of the car at red lights, yelling at people, just like, and I think I'm sober, you know. And this is the craziness that's going on in my head. I think I'm sober at this point, and I'm jamming a needle in my butt, you know, at night. It's crazy, you know. And eventually I picked up a drink, you know. It was good. I bought another brand new car. Had another repo. Had another, you know, I was dating this Brazilian girl. She was exotic and she was pretty. She left. That's it. I drank. And it was just insanity. You know, my life was just a total, total mess. And, and then eventually, you know, I go back to what I like to do. And, you know, I click real good with the opiates. That's my thing, you know. And the drink only works for a little while. It works for about 90 days, and then I'm back on the other stuff. And this is what brought me to Florida. So, you know, that family got sick of me. They were like, "Yeah, you gotta go," you know. And before all that happened, you know, like everything, if you looked at me from the outside, everything looked good. The car, nice apartment, you know, nice sneakers, gold chain, you know. You know, I had the Mr. T startup kit, you know. So I looked all right from the outside, you know. You know, I know today it's not about materialistic growth, you know, it's about the spiritual growth in this program. You know, I'm so glad God has a sense of humor, because, anyway, so I have an overdose is what happened, you know, and like a good alcoholic I am, when things go wrong in my life, so, you know, I just went out and purchased a new couch set, a new, you know, like the pots and pans matched, you know, the tablecloth matched the freaking dinnerware. It was insane, you know, it's obsessive compulsive, you know, I had this overdose, and my landlord lived right down the stairs from me. I fell through the set of bifold doors in my apartment, and he heard the bang, because he lived right downstairs, and he said, "Dude, you got 15 days to get out of here," you know, and like a good alcoholic I am, I have an everything must go sale, you know. Couch right out the back door for $400. I just got done paying $2,200 for it, you know. I always thought that I did. I thought it was about looking good, you know. So I sell all these things and I go off to detox one more time. And it doesn't work, you know. And like a good alcoholic I am, when things go wrong in my life, who do I turn to? My biggest enabler. Call Mom. Ma, I need a place to stay. And I come up with some lie that I told her. I don't know what it was, but I wasn't even conscious, I don't think. But I go back and I live on her couch, you know, and my dad, you know, and my dad ran rampant in that house, and it was okay. It wasn't okay, you know, put this poor lady through hell. When I think about it, I get choked up about it. But, you know, she was just down here, and she come and stayed at my house, you know, a couple of months back, and it was probably the most proudest moment of my life, I tell you. So I'm staying here. My older brother moves down to Florida, and my older brother isn't one of us. You know, he doesn't have an alcohol problem. Drinks every night, but he doesn't have an alcohol problem. Got a DUI a couple months before I got here. But, you know, that's the thing about him. Like, he gets a DUI, what does he do? He stops driving. I don't do that, you know. I drive faster, you know. So I call him and I'm at the end of the rope, you know. I just, you know, I got nowhere else to go, and I'm like, "Dude, I got a problem and I need some help." And at this point, my older brother got out of prison after serving 10 years in state prison, and my little brother got out of prison doing a 2.5 year sentence, and they both moved down here. Before I got here, they moved down here. And they both moved down here for the same reason that I came here, and it just didn't work for them. They got here and they started drinking, and they started using drugs, and their addiction took them right back to Massachusetts. And I said, "I'm just going to do things a little different." You know, I had a taste of sobriety. Even though it was only fellowship and going to meetings, it was much better than the way I was living. You know, and I learned some tools, you know. I learned some tools, and I wanted that life back. I really did. Desperately, I just, with everything that I had inside me, I wanted that life back, and I didn't know what to do, and I moved here. And he called me back 20 minutes later, and he goes, you can move here. He goes, you need to find a job within 2 weeks, and you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, I can do that. You know, I'm the alcoholic that likes the easiest, softer way. By the time I landed in Tampa, they had already found me a job. All I had to do was show up at Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was great. I showed up and I raised my hand and I learned some, like, you know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in Massachusetts, I raised my hand and said I was new to the area. And, you know, and they passed out a list of phone numbers. I did the same exact thing when I moved down here to Tampa, Newport Richey. And I just started going to this place over there. It's called the A Club. And I was there for a couple weeks. And this is where I get into taking my last drink, because I didn't stay sober. I was two weeks sober, but I had just come off Suboxone. You know, I was addicted to opiates when I got here. And I brought a couple of Suboxones with me on the plane. And I detoxed at my brother's, and I kept on going to meetings. I didn't count it as sobriety time, because I wasn't sober, but it got me my start in AA. It did. And I had a temporary sponsor, and I was driving my bike to this group pretty much every day when I wasn't working. And then one night, my sponsor was like, "Hey, listen, we're going to go to a pretty big meeting." He goes, "I want you to come with me." And I'm like, "All right, cool." My brother, before I left, had invited me to a cookout on Saturday night. So I guess I'm going to be honest with my sponsor, and I'm going to tell him. I'm going to be like, you know, going to a cookout on Saturday. My brother, you know, it's going to split up my week. I've been going to meetings and going right home, going to meetings and going right home. I had no social life. So he was like, "Is there going to be alcohol there?" You know, and I instantly got defensive. And I look back, like looking back through my life now, it's because I probably wanted to drink more than I wanted to stay sober. You know, and I was like, listen, I'm not going to hide from alcohol for the rest of my life. I had no business being around alcohol at 2.5 weeks sober. No business. And I went to that party and I got drunk. And then I walked around for like 2 weeks and then I didn't tell anybody. And I was ready to drink. I was planning my next drink. I was ready to get drunk again. You know, I was just right in here. It was just uneasy. I didn't feel right, you know. I had 2.5 weeks of my sobriety was fake. I was telling everybody I was sober for a whole month, you know. And I was going to this group and they passed out a 30-day chip. And I was like, I got 30 days. And I get up and I took this chip, and then I sat down, and it was a open discussion meeting, and then I proceeded to tell everybody how great my life was. You know, I was a fraud, you know, and I was doing the same things that I did back in Massachusetts, and I know what the end result is. You know, if I continued to act like that and continue to behave like that, you know, my life was just going to spiral out of control again, you know. And I did. I even tried to cop some drugs when I was down here. I'm so grateful that God just had a different plan for me. And I was at an open speaker meeting on Tuesday night, and I just started crying to a guy that picked me up and took me everywhere and introduced me to everybody. And I just said, he was like, "Dude, what's the matter?" I'm like, "Man, I drank 2 weeks ago." And I go, "And I haven't been able to tell anybody." And he was like, kind of slapped me in the back of the head and said, "You know, it's okay, but it's not okay." He's like, "Pick a new day. Start over." And I did, and I took that. I took the 23rd of May was my sobriety day, and I'm forever grateful for that day. You know, it's and I made a decision that night that I was going to do things a lot different. You know, I knew I was going to do things. I had a sponsor in mind, got a piece of ice by accident. Filtered water here, huh? That's nice. Good water. So I got this sponsor in mind. And, you know, when I went to that Friday night meeting that my temporary sponsor took me to, I left with a resentment. You know, this guy that I want to be my sponsor, this temporary sponsor, introduces me to him. And he just like, "Yeah, hey, what's up, man? Nice to meet you." And then he just like took off. I'm like, what a jerk, you know? But, you know, I kept on coming back, and I seen him at that Monday night speakers meeting, and that Monday night open, the Monday night discussion meeting. I seen him at that meeting, and that was the meeting that I was telling people I had a month, and I didn't. And I was like, "Dude, I need a sponsor." He's like, "You go to a lot of meetings?" I said, "Yeah, I go to a meeting every night." And he was like, "What are you willing to do for victory over alcohol?" And I absolutely said anything this time. And he goes, "Good, I'll pick you up tomorrow." And he picked me up the very next day. And he started bringing me through the first 164 pages of this book. And my life started to change little by slow, you know. And, you know, I stopped thinking of drinking. you know, the obsession started to go away, and I was like, wow, this is awesome. You know, and I've never had that anywhere I ever went. You know, I've never had that obsession. That obsession just controls my life. It just calls the shots, who I hang out with, what I'm doing. You know, it takes control of my whole life. And for once, like, that obsession was gone, and recovery started. It was pretty amazing. You know, and we sat in the parking lot at Starbucks every Saturday, and he bought me a cup of coffee, and he read the book to me, and he explained to me what this illness was, and I had no clue. You know, I had no clue that if I take one drink, that you know, that I have no control over what happens to me. You know, and he explained that to me, and he explained to me about the powerlessness and the unmanageability. And we went back through my life, and then he gave me the directions to write a fourth step. You know, this is a kind of a funny part. This is a funny story. So, you know, by this time I'm starting to get a couple of things back in my life, right? So I got a couple of material things. You know, I think I might have just bought a car, but I got this little John boat, right? And I'm like, I love fishing. You know, before my father, well, my whole life, you know, one thing, I mean, like, my dad's my hero. Bottom line, he taught me so many good things that I acquire in my life today, it isn't even funny, you know. And I'll get back to the boat, but how I kind of explain my dad, I remember when I was a little kid, I was in center field. I was a good baseball player. And this is how I describe my dad. Like, and I just remember this, like, I going back through my life, and I'm like, I should have said that at the beginning. I got a couple of things that I might cry about tonight, you know. But I'm out in center field, and I robbed this kid from a home run, like, over the fence. Like, my arm goes over the fence, and I just pick this ball off over the fence, and, like, I see my dad standing up cheering, like, that's my boy. I feel like that right now. I feel like I'm in center field right now. And but anyway, so I'm getting ready to do, I did a couple of fourth steps, but I'm getting ready to do my first fourth step. And I got this little John boat, and I hook it up to the back of my car, and I'm going to take my sponsor out, and I'm going to hit him with my fifth step, and then we're going to do a little fishing after, right? And my friend's father, after I come back, I feel like I'm on top of the world. It's great. You know, I'm like, wow, this is how recovery feels. This is really good, right? And he was like, what'd you do? I said, I did my first fifth step today. It was right around the time that, like, the Gulf oil spill was. He goes, not even BP could clean up that mess. You know, and that was my first fourth step. And you know, and I did another one with that sponsor again, you know, because more will be revealed. And I just started showing up to AA, man, and my life started taking off, and good things started to happen. And, like, you know, that spiritual experience that they talk about in the 12 step, like, it happened in my life. You know, I did a 9 step. I started making amends to my mother, my brother. You know, I call those the easy amends. You know, those are the guaranteed amends. You know, that, you know, they're gonna accept. I'm their family. You know, I'm their family member. You know, and you know, I didn't go down the scale that far, I guess. You know. You know, and I'm making the, you know, and that's when the stuff happens. That's when the promises come true in your life, you know. And, like, I've never experienced anything like it, you know. My life is absolutely amazing today because of you guys and Alcoholics Anonymous and this 12-step work, you know. I have a bunch of amazing things that happen. A bunch of amazing things that I've, not amazing, a bunch of, like, rough stuff. Like I was at a, you know, I get a little embarrassed about it, but I'm going to tell it anyways, because this is, like, you guys identify with this stuff, you know. So I'm like, at a year and a half sober, you know, and my boy Chris just came back around, and, like, we're hanging out, and, like, you know, and my life's still good. I'm a little insane at this point right now, you know. It's like, 2 years sober, and I meet this girl in AA, and she picks up, and I'm absolutely nuts. I just, like, so many bad things happen. I'm not blaming that girl. Her bad behaviors, I think, rubbed off on my own actions, but the way she was acting just rubbed off on me, and I was just like, I might as well have been drinking, you know. And I'm obsessive, I'm out of control texting. Like, I stopped going to meetings. Like, I end up with a restraining order, you know, in sobriety, right? I'm up in front of a podium like this, right? And the judge is like, you're a stalker. I said, obsessive compulsive at best. Right? Bad, you know. And, you know, God's got a funny way of revealing himself to you, you know what I mean? And, like, and that relationship ended, you know. And then I was by myself for a little while. And I get back into AA, I get back into start helping people. And, like, things just start, like, about a year and a half, I ended up with this great job. This was a real tough part that I got through. Like, I'm at it like a year and a half sober. Like, right around this time when I'm seeing this girl, and I'm batshit crazy, and my little brother suffers from this illness a little bit more than the next guy, you know, and he's got some psychological things happening up in his head, and he tried to take his own life, and he and he jumped off. I mean, I'm so happy that he didn't die. You know, he jumped off a bridge in Massachusetts, 170 stories. I'm sorry, 170 feet into the Boston Harbor, and he survived. And you know, and it was the first time that I was never a brother. I was never a son. You know, for all these years I was drinking and drugging. Like, those drinking drugs took all that away from me. You know, and I get this phone call, and I'm a year and a half sober, and they're like, "Yeah, Kevin tried to commit suicide, and he's in a coma." And it's the first time, right? You know, just real glad that he didn't go, you know, especially that way, you know. And my older brother and my younger sister's here. And what do? We just, you know, we got to get back to Massachusetts. We jump in this little car that I had bought in sobriety, and we fly, and we just drive back to Massachusetts. And, you know, and I was a son to my mother, and I was a brother to my siblings, you know, and it was just the first time that I showed up for life in a long time. And I didn't have to drink, and I didn't have to drug, you know, and I just was there to support. And eventually he made it through, man. Broke every rib, broke his collarbone, collapsed both lungs. He should not be here. You know, God definitely saved his life, you know, and I made it through that, you know, with the help of you guys. You know, I stayed on the phone with my sponsor. I went to a couple of meetings that I got sober back in Massachusetts when I got sober before. You know, and I just did this thing. You know, this is about action. It's about moving your feet in this thing. You know, you got to move your feet if you want to get sober. And I did it. You know, and so I mean, a couple of bad things. So the breakup with that girl, restraining order, my little brother jumping off the bridge. I'm like, man, could it get any worse? And it didn't. It started to get better from that point on. You know, that girl eventually left, and I was by myself for a little while. What time does this end? What? Oh, 8:45? Good. I got a few more things. So, you know, those couple of bad things happened, and I stayed by myself for a while. And, like, I was lonely. You know, it was the first time that I was lonely in sobriety. You know, and I'm like, you know, I never was by myself. Never. You know, and I stayed by myself, and I started working on myself a little bit more. My sponsor had moved to D.C. I got a new sponsor. And I started trying to give this thing back to whoever wanted it, you know. Any guy that came into my path that wanted to stay sober on a daily basis, I just reached out my hand and just, like, did what someone taught me when I got here. And my life started to take off. And I got this good job that I've been with for almost 5 years. And I don't need a pat on the back. This is just my experience on my things that happened to me in sobriety. These are the things I should have been doing a long time ago, you know. And I got this good job, my credit's starting to get a little better, and the material things are starting to happen in my life, and like I'm like working at this job, and I'm a good employee. I show up every day, you know, and I'm, you know, they depend on me, and I'm reliable, and I'm like, I'm gonna buy a house, you know, and everybody else does it back. Everybody else does it the right way, you know. They get married, then they have a kid, then they buy the house. I do it backwards. I buy the house, then I have the kid, you know. And now, you know, maybe marriage is in the works somewhere, you know. But I buy this house, you know, and it's a big thing in my family. I'm the second one to buy a house in my family, and that's pretty huge. You know, my older sister, who's not an alcoholic or an addict or anything like that, you know, those are the ones that, you know, get things, you know, and don't lose them. I went and seen her. Like, she's never met my, like, and so I buy this house, and I get involved with this girl, and anybody that can put up with me is a saint, you know. But I meet this girl, and she ends up getting pregnant, and we have this little son. It was absolutely the best experience of my sobriety, I'll tell you that right now. And she had a C-section, and I was the first one to hold this baby. But before I just share this little experience with you, because it's just amazing. It's a great part of my sobriety. It's what, you know, all day long I think of this little baby and that smile when I get home. And he's 7 months old almost now, and he's just the cutest little boy, and it's just, I mean, sobriety is awesome, you know. But So they take me out of the room and they ship me down this little hallway before I get into the operating room, and I lose it. Like, I'm just like, God, please do not let anything happen to these two. And I get in there and the baby comes out and he starts crying, and I hold him for the first time, and I just start crying. Like, I'm like, who is this? You know, like, I'm like, I never cried inside. I mean, I've cried a couple of times when my brother got hurt, and you know, but I'm like, damn, where did that come from? And that was the absolute greatest experience of my sobriety, is to hold that little boy, and I'm just like, wow. Like, I'm a bad decision maker. And God gives me this little child to raise, and I'm like, man, are you kidding me? And it's just awesome. It really is. I don't even know. Like, I mean, I mean, that's the highlight of my sobriety right now. Besides giving this thing back to, I got a couple of sponsees, you know, that I work with. And besides that, I mean, I got this amazing girlfriend that puts up with me. I don't know why sometimes I don't, you know, but I don't know. I don't know where I want to go with this. I think 8:27. We'll get to fellowship a little bit longer tonight. Get over to that place where they're going. I'm just real grateful that Dan made it down here. Another one of my home group members made it down here to switch up this commitment with you guys. We did this a couple of different times before. I spoke here a couple of years ago, and it's a good experience. It's good to get down here. You know, I know a lot of people down here, and I love this group. And, our group follows a lot of the same things that you guys do. You know, we do a lot of the same things that you do down here. And, it's about the newcomer. It's about giving this thing back to the guy that came in here that has no hope. You know, that was me when I first got here. I had no hope whatsoever, you know, and now I have just like this amazing life, you know. And you know what the greatest part about it is? I have nothing to do with it. You know, this is all God. You know, I like what it talks about in I don't know exactly where it is in the book, but it talks about like I will have a new employer. You know, I think it's the second step proposal. I'm pretty sure it is. That as long as I stay close to him, like my new employer today is God, you know, and I try to do whatever I can to serve him, you know, and it tells me if I stay close to him and perform his work well, you know, this thing is going to just explode in my life, and it has, you know. And I like to end with this, and it's one of my favorite parts of the big book, and it's Dr. Bob's nightmare, and it's at the very end of the book, and it's the last paragraph, you know. And then it talks about if you're an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other intellectual pride which it keeps you from accepting what's in this book, I feel sorry for you. But if you want to quit liquor for good and for all, we have an answer for you. It tells me that this thing never fails, never is good odds for an alcoholic like myself. Never means that if I follow this book with a sponsor that went through it, with a sponsor, and I try to give this thing back to another alcoholic, it never fails. So that means that if I do these things, that I'm never going to take another drink again. Thanks for my sobriety.